Welcome on board a daily adventure to discover true wisdom, authentic hope, a stronger faith, and profound joy. Yeah. Hey. This is the Debbie Chavez Show. Debbie Chavez Show. You're the shining star. No matter who you are,
shine bright to see. And you can truly be what you can truly be. Welcome, friends and neighbors. It is wonderful to be back together again as we journey through this life together toward hope, wisdom, and joy. Now, coming up in just a moment, we'll be joined by a couple of different ladies, both of them mothers, who will have some inspiration for overwhelmed moms and some practical tips and advice for stressed out mothers across America. So you don't want to go away if you're a mom listening or even maybe a concerned dad out there, concerned about your wife. Go ahead and tune in as well and you can eavesdrop on our conversation. That's coming up in just a moment. Toward the end of the hour in the Something You Should Know file, a new survey reveals how Americans' political views affect their faith. Also, some Americans voice concern over Islamic law's influence here in the United States. And a large new study indicates more Americans might want to take statin drugs for better health. We'll have the scoop on that as well. Coming up at the end of the hour in the Something You Should Know file. Plus, we'll have our healthy recipe of the day. You can always check out a whole bunch of healthy recipes, usually pretty low in saturated fat in particular. We post those on our healthy recipe tab of the website, debbiechavez.com. So check it out and eat healthier. Right now, though, let's get busy with our wild, wacky, and wonderful stories of the day. First in the wild department, this is amazing. Surgeons successfully removed a 6-inch fishing spear from the brain of a man who was struck while diving off the coast of Rio de Janeiro. Emerson de Oliveira Abreu apparently fired the spear, which ricocheted off rocks and penetrated his own head so deeply that only the tip of the fishing spear was showing. Good heavens, doctors say it took 5 hours of high-risk surgery to remove the spear from the guy, who is doing well and is not likely to suffer any major lasting damage. Can you believe that? The spear entered just above his left eye and missed the most critical areas of his brain. Whew, that is pretty wild. Well, here is a story of another freak accident, also with a nice ending. A 9-year-old Oregon girl playing baseball with friends on city land was rescued by her playmates the other day after being suddenly sucked into the ground by a large sinkhole that had appeared. Goodness sakes! The girl's grandmother says it's a miracle that her granddaughter Paige survived the incident, in which she fell through the top of an old septic or cesspool system in a vacant lot owned by the city of Portland. City workers say the hole that emerged was 16 to 20 feet deep. Goodness, can you imagine that? Just kind of getting sucked into this sinkhole, basically. Thankfully, she was pulled out and escaped without any injury. Wacky story. A retired police chief said he was robbed by probably the dumbest criminal in Pennsylvania this past Friday morning. John Camporetto said as he came out of a stall in the men's room at a conference, a man pointed a gun in his face, demanded money. Thing is, this robbery took place at a convention of police officers. Hello? What thief decides to stage a holdup at a police convention? The guy was arrested, of course. Another wacky story for you here. A Michigan man has learned not to stick his fingers in his gas tank. Victor Harris of Michigan was pouring a fuel additive into his Lincoln Navigator Sport Utility vehicle the other day when a piece of paper fell into the gas tank. So he tried to fish the paper out, but his index finger became stuck in the gas tank. And I mean really stuck. He tried to extract his digit for 2 hours before friends called the fire department. It took the fire department another 2 hours before they could cut the gas tank off of his finger. Whoa, don't try that at home. One more wacky story for you. Or at least it seems wacky to me. The recession seems to have a sweet tooth. As unemployment has risen and 401ks have shrunk, Americans have been consuming growing volumes of candy, according to candy makers and store owners. Theories vary on exactly why. Maybe the sugar lifts, you know, spirits that are dragged down by the languishing economy. Maybe candy provides a nostalgic reminder of better times. Maybe it's just because it's relatively cheap. I don't know. But for instance, at Candiality, a Chicago store, business has jumped by nearly 80% compared with this time last year. At the candy store in San Francisco, the owner has tripled her orders for nostalgic candies. Also, Cadbury reported a 30% rise in profits for 2008. So go figure, people eating more candy is, I don't know, for some reason during the recession.
Well, let's move to some wonderful stories, shall we? First of all, the Salvation Army of the Midwest region says it will distribute over $3 million to assist newly unemployed families throughout the Midwest. Overall, 148 Salvation Army locations in 11 Midwest states will receive grants averaging $25,000. So that'll be quite a help to many families in the Midwest. And last but not least in the wonderful category, a federal judge has dismissed the claims of a parent who wanted to remove the words "under God" from the Texas Pledge of Allegiance recited each morning by public school children. U.S. District Judge Ed Kincaid ruled the state pledge may continue to reference God because the National Pledge and four other states reference God or divine grace in their pledge. So there you have it. They can still say "under God" in Texas. And that's a look at our wild, wacky, and wonderful stories of the day. Well, time now to welcome to the program newspaper columnist and speaker Deborah Cody. Hi there, Deborah.
Hi, Debbie. How are you?
I am just marvelous. You are a mother, as I am a mother. And you've written a delightful new book called Mom Needs Chocolate. I love that title.
That's right.
I love the title of that book. Just kind of sums it all up some days, doesn't it?
It does indeed.
Yeah. Well, you have raised your kids successfully, right? They're older now, correct?
Yes. I have a 26-year-old and a 24-year-old now.
Okay. Okay. Well, you start out your book by talking about the fact that you've discovered that God has a sense of humor, an amazing sense of humor, you say. So give us an example of God's amazing sense of humor as you were raising your children, and I'm sure sometimes feeling, well, maybe just a bit stressed out.
Well, I have been just so blessed with crazy. I enjoyed listening to your wacky stories there. I have some crazy stories that have happened to me as during my course of motherhood.
Yes.
But, you know, I think the main theme of my book is that in the midst of the muck and the mire of motherhood, when we just get so just drowning in it, that we can find that joy of the Lord that we have unfortunately checked out on the doorstep because we have so many other things that take our attention and our, our energies that we're not able to remember and to reconnect with that joy of the Lord. And that's my theme, that mom needs chocolate in the same way that we need that chocolate fix. We need that, that comfort that we get from that wonderful, creamy, delicious stuff.
Oh, yes.
You know, we can get that from Papa God if we just think to turn to him for that.
Yeah, yeah, and we have to. I mean, let's face it, raising little kids is especially if you're working outside the home as well, and I'm not diminishing what, stay-at-home moms do, but if you're trying to balance, an outside career and raising kids, and then you've got a husband you need to make sure you're, sewing into the marriage relationship, I mean, that's a lot of stress, and who wouldn't be overwhelmed by all of that?
Oh, absolutely. I remember very vividly a day when my kids were little and I was standing at the front door with my sister as she was leaving. My arms were full of laundry. The dog was scratching at my leg to go out. One of my 5-year-old was screaming bloody murder because of a broken toy. And I remember looking at my sister and saying, "Where's the joy? Where did the joy go? What happened? I don't even remember the last time I laughed." And she understood because she was there too.
Yeah.
And that was why I wrote Mom Needs Chocolate, just to give women a glimmer of hope, of light at the end of the tunnel.
Yes, indeed. Well, let's go through a couple of your stories and maybe the lesson that you learned. Because, through all these hardships and challenges and frustrations and such that we call motherhood, there are usually little nuggets that we can pull out of any circumstance and say, okay, thank you for teaching me that lesson, Lord. And you tell one story that I did have to chuckle about your son, kind of losing track of your son while you were shopping for some new clothes. Can you tell us of that story and maybe what you learned at the end of all that?
Well, sure. He was a very young at the time. He was under 2, and we were at the mall, and I was a kind of a Kmart shopper back then, and I pretty much still am, but we went into this exclusive women's shop. I was looking for a specific blouse, I remember, to go with a certain outfit, and I ventured in there on a whim. I didn't usually travel in that sort of a circle, but he was in a stroller, and the little Dickens somehow managed to get out of the stroller while I was perusing blouses. And next thing I know, I'm pushing this empty stroller back and forth, and I look down, oh, he's gone. And I get on my hands and knees, and I'm crawling around looking for him. Matthew, come out, come out. And the in my story, I called her Miss Hightower. The store manager kind of glided over and with her silken voice said, "Madam, may I help you, please?" And I'm like crawling around with my hair hanging over my face, spinning, trying to find my son. And I right as I stood up to speak with her, we hear this burst of laughter and this big knuffle going on at the front of the store. Uh-huh. And we look over, and there's sweet little buddy Matthew has somehow made it through into the plate glass window there, the display case.
Oh, great.
And he's sitting in the lap of the mannequin with her fingers outstretched toward heaven with beautiful colored stockings attached to each finger from her fingertips all the way to the ceiling in this beautiful array. And all these people have gathered at the front of the window, that just mob are just laughing at him. And they're, you know, they're just totally into this.
And you're mortified. And
oh, my goodness. I was waiting on the mall police to come escort me off the premises, and I couldn't reach him.
Oh.
And I'm like flailing around my arm through there, and Miss Hightower is just like white as a ghost, with, you know, just blanching out there. And finally, I grabbed the toe of his sneaker, and he's just laughing and having a great time with his mannequin. He's, "Mommy, pretty lady, Mommy." And I'm reeling him in, inch by inch, from the toe of his sneakers, and he's pulling the mannequin with him.
Oh, great.
All the way across, and he's knocking all the other mannequins down, and they're just ping, ping, all these, they're flying off the where they had been tacked to the ceiling. The stockings are going everywhere, and I finally managed to get him out. By then, of course, he's screaming, and he's got her plastic arm with him. He hauls it right out of the window, and Miss Hightower is, like, sitting there like she's in a daze. And so I hand her this plastic appendage, and I didn't know what do you say at this point.
Right.
What can you say? So I said, "I am so sorry." And I threw the poor little thing in a stroller, and I took off 1,000 miles an hour. And, you know, I started, kept looking over my shoulder, waiting on the mall police to come get me. But, you know, at that point, I was so angry with him for doing that to me and for being such a bad boy.
Yeah.
And I just lambasted him, and I said, "Why would you do this to me? You are so bad. You are such a bad boy." And, you know, I could see the confusion and the hurt and the pain flash across his little face.
Mm.
And I realized what I was saying, and I stopped right there. I got down on my knees, and I looked at him face to face, and I said, "Honey, I'm sorry. Mommy's sorry. I was wrong. You are not a bad boy. You just do things that are naughty sometimes, just like me."
Mm.
And I remembered all the things I had done that very day that would have embarrassed my Heavenly Father when I had, you know, taken the dollar extra that the clerk gave me, when I cut off the driver in traffic, when I was nasty to my husband over breakfast. And I realized that just as my Heavenly Father forgives me, that I can forgive my son as well.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's how I try to take Scripture and apply it to real life, the real down in the trenches, mud between our toes lives that mothers live.
Oh, boy. You give another cute little example, too, of, you know, children, they just are little Dickens. I mean, there's not just no other word for it. You tell the story, I think it was your daughter sitting in church, and there was a sermon or something, and the word dust was used. Can you tell us that story where another time that you were mortified, it sounds like?
Yes.
A common theme.
Typical of what mothers endure all the time. But my little girl at that time, we went to a very small church, and we didn't have children's church. So after the kids were, you know, about 4 or 5, they went with us to church. So I had her sitting there, and I noticed that she would doodle on her bulletin or daydream. So I said, "You know, you're like 7 now. You're old enough to pay attention in church." So on the way one morning to church, I gave her a little lecture on listening to the pastor.
Yes.
And we got there, and there was a visiting minister, and he was quite eloquent and quite pious. And we got to the offertory, and he lifted his arms in the air toward heaven, and he said, "Lord, without you, we are but dust." And my little sweetie, who was actually paying attention, lifted up her little girl voice and piped up and said, "Mommy, what is butt dust?"
Don't you love it?
It was heard by one and all, and the fellows, this very pious fellow's face turned purple. But it was just one of those priceless moments.
Yes. Oh, and you know, I think every mom can tell story after story. You know, I think when I, going back to your shopping experience, I mean, some of my worst moments were in stores. I mean, I had my boy had one of these problems with his stomach. It's called gastroesophageal reflux or something. Anyway, and so he was always spitting up until he got to be about 1 year old. And when I say spitting up, I mean like voluminous. I mean, it was a lot, always coming up, right? And I'm in this grocery store. And when he did this, it would sometimes be a bit projectile. And so I'm in this grocery store, and I'm walking down the aisle, and I'm in a really big hurry, and I, you know, need to get out of there. And this other lady is walking by my son, and so anyway, he spits up. It hits her in the back. And I didn't say anything. I was just so like,
Linda Blair, stop that.
I just didn't even know what to do. I was so embarrassed that I feel regretful to this day that, I mean, if she's listening, I'm so sorry I didn't say that you were walking around with spit up all over your back. But it was like, what are you going to do? You know, there's just no way to gracefully get out of this situation.
Oh, that's priceless. I love it.
That's just one of my stories. The other one in the shopping arena was when I was trying on clothes in a clothing store in a mall, and my son was about two maybe, and just enough that, you know, he got out of the stroller in the dressing room, and he opened the door while I was looking, and there I am, you know, pretty much unclothed, and there's guys standing out there waiting for their wives to come out, and I'm like, hello. Let me just shut that door.
Oh, no.
Oh, kids just do the doggondest things, don't they?
They sure do. They indeed. Oh, my.
So if you were to leave our listeners, we're going to be chatting with another mom in just a moment. But if you were to give your one bit of advice after all of the stuff you went through raising your kids and being frustrated and overwhelmed and tired and all those things, what would your best advice be to overwhelmed young mothers out there?
Well, I would say to don't lose sight of the strength that we can draw from God, Godiva, and girlfriends.
Mm.
All three of those are essential to us making it through that motherhood journey.
Yeah.
And that's what I try to share when I speak with women's groups, and that's what I try to share in my book.
Yeah.
You know, in that order, we need God, Godiva, and girlfriends.
Godiva referring to chocolate, of course.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Yeah. I don't know what it is about women and chocolate, but it really does help, doesn't it?
It does. And I, when you mentioned in your wacky stories that Cadbury's profits went up 30%, I had to giggle because that's probably due to me because I eat that much.
Oh, man. I don't know. It's an addiction.
And I do love Cadbury. Yes, indeed.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. And we're going to make a couple of copies of your book available. Thank you so much, Deborah.
Well, you're welcome. It was my pleasure. And I wanted to mention, too, I know you do some volunteer chaplain work at your county jail.
Yes.
And I as well visit regularly our county jail. And that's something that I really have been amazed at the ministry that's important there. And I've been able to get My Mom Needs Chocolate in our county jail, which is so exciting.
Yes, that's a great idea. Yeah.
So I'm hoping that through humor and through that is a socially acceptable way that you can get the gospel in
and
that these ladies will be able to hear more about the Lord through that.
That's a great idea. What a great ministry. Thank you so much to Deborah Cody. And if you'd like a copy of her book, Mom Needs Chocolate, Hugs, Humor, and Hope for Surviving Motherhood, then go ahead and send an email to lynn@debbychavez.com. Lynn is spelled L-Y-N-N-E. And hopefully we can get a free copy to you while they last, whether you're listening live right now or listening later on in iTunes. Just request the book Mom Needs Chocolate. Now, in a moment, we'll be back with a different mom who is actually a professional nanny and won a national award as a nanny, but she's also a mom and a parenting consultant, and she's going to give us some specific helpful hints for stressed out and overwhelmed moms in just a moment.
Have a question for a guest you hear on The Debbie Chavez Show? Calls are always welcome while the program is streamed live at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern. The toll-free number is posted in yellow at DebbieChavez.com.
Worried about the economy? You shouldn't be. Northwest Honda's business is as strong as ever. Maybe that's because they represent the car company that has an esteemed reputation of high resale value, fuel efficiency, and reliability second to none. And right now, Northwest Honda has financing rates as low as 0.9%. Or you can lease a brand new Civic for just $199 a month. And be sure to check out the new Honda Fit, which boasts fast looks and slick styling. Plus, if you're interested in a quality pre-owned vehicle, Honda has you covered. And their certified used cars give the peace of mind you just don't get at other dealerships. So let Bellingham's Northwest Honda show you their complete lineup of hybrids, SUVs, trucks, vans, and cars. Honda's definitely put the excitement back in driving. Want to know more? Then stop by Northwest Honda on Iowa Street in Bellingham and drive away a winner.
Driving Northwest Honda.
I lost my job.
I lost my home.
What is the cost of drug and alcohol addiction?
I lost my health.
I lost my self-respect.
I lost my freedom.
If you have a drug or alcohol problem, remember, treatment is effective and recovery is possible. For information on drug and alcohol treatment referral for you or someone you know, call 1-800-662-HELP and see what you could save.
With recovery, I got my life back.
On the program with professional nanny and parenting consultant Michelle LaRoe. Hi there, Michelle.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us. You have written a book called Working Moms 411. And boy, is this a book ever needed, because there are a ton of working moms out there. I was a working mom for a long time, and now my kids are older. And you are now, after being a nanny for many years, now a working mom yourself, because you have a newborn, correct?
I do. She's 8 months old.
Oh, my goodness. So you're entering this whole zone yourself.
And I am.
My goodness, I'm reading on the back cover here that you were the 2004 International Nanny Association Nanny of the Year. How do you get to be Nanny of the Year internationally? Wow.
You know, it was a great honor. You know, I went through my college degree working as a nanny. I was studying to be a chemist, but I knew I couldn't do it when I was a junior in college.
Oh, my gosh.
And I learned about this whole underground world of in-home child care, full of associations and professional organizations and credentialing exams and those kind of things.
Wow.
And I really got involved in the industry and really was an advocate to improve quality in-home child care. And I really committed myself to making a difference in the children's lives I care for and in the in-home child care industry.
Yeah.
And I did receive that honor in 2004. I was nominated by quite a few people, actually. And, you know, they go through a whole selection committee process, an interview committee, and a rigorous application and screening process. And then the committee selects a nanny of the year, and I was really, really excited to have that honor.
Wow, that's terrific. Well, let's tackle this whole business of working moms, because, you know, a lot of moms feel intense guilt if they go back to work, and yet for many in America, it's just a necessity. I mean, for some, it certainly isn't. It's a choice. But for so many, they really need, you know, two incomes, or maybe it's a single mom, and she has no choice. She just has to work, and yet there is intense guilt. And you had some thoughts about dealing with the guilt and really managing our expectations if we're going to be a working mom. So what have you learned that you could share with us?
Well, you know, just because you feel guilty doesn't mean you are guilty. That's the number one thing I like to say to working moms. I like to encourage them to step back and to objectively look at their situation. Because the truth is, just because you have feelings surrounding your circumstance doesn't mean that they're true, that you feel guilty, so you are guilty. That's not true.
Yeah.
We need to look at our situation and objectively pull back and see why we're doing what we're doing, and if we've made the right choice for our family. Mm. And if we can know that we did make the right choice for our family, that's really all that matters.
Mm. Okay. But you talk about how important it is to manage our expectations, though. So do we have the wrong expectations generally?
Well, you know, so often we talk about working moms can't do it all. They have to give up something.
Yeah.
The truth is they have to give things away. They have to look at their situation and decide what tasks that they don't need to handle or micromanage.
Mm-hmm.
What can they outsource? And that could mean getting the kids involved with, you know, doing more chores, getting your spouse on board with helping with the household task. It could even mean doing your grocery shopping online at night, which can save you time and money, and have them delivered directly to your door.
Mm. Wow. Now, you have been a nanny, obviously, so you're familiar with the in-home kind of a daycare where the nanny would come to the person's home, and yet many people would go the other route where they take their child to some kind of daycare facility. Do you have some thoughts as to what, you know, if one is the preference, or, you know, it certainly is probably more expensive to have someone come to your home. So what
would you say? That's actually a myth. You know, if you have two or more kids, you know, you're paying for two or three slots in daycare. Mm. And the truth is, if you hire an in-home child care provider, you don't pay by the child. Mm. So it can actually be more cost-effective if you have more than, you know, one child to come into your home, to have a nanny come into your home. You also get to hand select your child care provider.
Yeah.
You know, for families that really care about who's raising their kid and they want to know specifically, they want to help pick the type of person that they're going to have in their home and in contributing to their children's lives, nanny is a great option.
Mm.
And I think we have to, you know, evaluate what your situation's like. If you and your spouse both have flexible jobs that require travel, or they may require, you know, working late occasionally, you want to have a child care provider that's flexible and able to work those hours.
Yeah.
In daycare, sometimes you can pay, you know, $1 a minute if you're late for pickup.
Oof.
You know, nanny care doesn't work that way. So it really depends on your situation, but it could be more cost effective.
Now, a lot of us have heard about the nightmares of, you know, a nanny gone bad type thing, you know, where it was just a horrible experience. And so people are not putting, you know, video cameras in their homes to catch every movement and monitor the nanny. So what kinds of things would you say it would be important to look for if you're thinking about this idea of hiring a nanny to come to your house? I mean, what kind of questions?
Well, you know, first I want to say is, unfortunately, the media has really done a job in using the word nanny to apply to people that aren't nannies.
Oh.
Au pairs, for example, aren't designed to take care of your children full-time. They're here on a travel and tourism bureau. Your neighborhood lady up the street who offers to come into your home and take care of your kids, that's not a nanny. Today's professional nanny is, you know, a career professional with a working knowledge and genuine love for children.
Mm.
You know, some of us pass credentialing exams. When we go through an agency, we go through more vigorous screening than you could imagine, from, you know, background checks to educational verification to reference checks and those kind of things. So I think you have to really, you know, understand what a nanny is, and it's really a true professional. And once you know that, you want to know someone, you know, that has a genuine love for children, that you click with, that is on the same parenting page as you.
Mm.
Obviously, you have to go through all your screening process. You want to know who, you know, what's the background of this person? What's their experience level? You want to check your references. But, you know, if you feel like you need a nanny care, then you need to let go of that nanny.
Mm.
You know, if you feel it in your gut that you have to, you know, monitor your nanny like that, then you've made the wrong choice.
Ooh, really? Huh.
So you, I'd say so.
So you wouldn't say that you need to have all the elaborate camera system and all this kind of thing?
I think if you think you need the camera system, you made the wrong choice.
Ooh, that's interesting. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so let's talk about some practical things, though. Not just about, you know, hiring a nanny, but let's say you are a working mom and you're just feeling overwhelmed. I mean, yeah, you've got someone helping to take care of the kids, but you know, maybe you're the single mom that's got to do everything when you come home, and you've got to do the meals and the laundry and the cleaning and da-da-da-da, and try to pay attention to your children. So what kinds of tips would you have for overwhelmed moms?
Tip one, you got to have routine and structure in your day.
Mm.
Routine and structure not only makes everyone feel secure and gives everyone a sense of security, it makes your life run smoother. Two, you got to have a place for everything. You waste so much time. We race with our chicken, our heads with the chicken cut off, you know, looking for missing socks, homework assignments that need to go back to school, things we were supposed to return to someone else. You got to have a place for everything. That's number two.
Mm.
Number three, you got to wake up 15 minutes before everyone else in the house.
Oh.
If you can't be ready and you haven't taken care of your own needs and yourself, you're not going to be ready to help out everyone else in the house. So that's the three top tips I can give working moms.
Wow, wow. And you even have in your book, I mean, you have all sorts of, like, nitty-gritty you know, suggestions here about, oh, utilizing a cork board, having a bulletin board by the front door for school notices and the family's schedule, and pulling out the clothes for the next day the night before. Now, see, that would be brilliant even for most people on Sunday morning when they're trying to get to church, huh?
Absolutely. It's vital because, you know, we spend too much time, you know, running around trying to catch up.
Oh.
But if we can get ahead of the game, you know, I say the morning routine starts the night before, and I really think that's true.
Mm. Now, what about the whole, just the amount of chores, though? I mean, you've got meals, and of course, we're all hearing about how we're not eating healthy enough, and we're feeding our kids too much junk food, which is the, you know, fast to prepare. So what kinds of suggestions for that?
You know, I say the working mom's, you know, secret weapon is the crock pot. I'm all about the crock pot. Seriously, you know, you put a roast in the morning, you come home, you got your protein, you got your vegetables, you got everything to go, smells good, tastes good, you know, it's nutritionally, you know, healthy for everybody. For families that are picky eaters, they encourage things like, you know, quesadillas. Again, you get your chicken, you get your, you know, or your beef, you get your vegetables, you get your dairy, you get your, you know, whole wheat tortillas. And if you have a picky family, like my husband doesn't eat onions. I put onions on my half. I don't put them on his, but I'm not recreating a whole meal. Things like quesadillas, fajitas, tacos, you know, salads, things that you can customize your individual portion, pizzas. Those are great things for families that have a diverse palates in their house.
Wow. Okay. In a moment, let's come back and talk about that whole business of organization and structure and schedules, because that's a foreign concept to a lot of people. I mean, we might start out with grand plans, but we seem to not follow through real well. So we'll get some tips from you on just kind of the whole structure that a working mom has to do. My guest, Michelle Leroux, her book is called Working Moms 411.
If you've been blessed by this talk show, please consider making a donation to our nonprofit organization called Great Awakening Productions. For more information, click on the donate button at DebbieChavez.com.
If you live in Northwest Washington, the company you can trust for all your electrical and plumbing needs is definitely Bodie's Electric and Plumbing. They've been family-owned for 47 years, and their experts can handle all phases of electrical and plumbing, from septic system installations to complete electrical rewiring of homes. Plus, they're one of just a few companies that can provide on-site sewer inspections by a certified professional. Bodie's Electric and Plumbing, serving Northwest Washington 24 hours a day and 7 days a week. Get more information online at www.bodies.biz. That's BODES.BIZ.
We were just driving to school. Yeah, the music was loud. And we were all talking. I thought I had everything under control. Until I hit that kid in the crosswalk.
Please, look for pedestrians. Stop for them. Think of the impact you could make. A message from the Federal Highway Administration.
Back on the program with professional nanny and parenting consultant Michelle Leroux. Her new book is called Working Moms 411, How to Manage Kids, Career, and Home. Let's talk about that whole organization thing, because, you know, so much of what you talk about is really, it seems like, a matter of organization, of prioritizing, of scheduling, thinking ahead. What specific kinds of tips or little things have helped you with that?
Well, you know, it doesn't matter what, you know, type of structure you put in your home, as long as you follow through. Mm-hmm. For example, for some families, you know, it may mean having, you know, bins lined up against the family room wall to separate toys. It might be as simple as that, but it's a system that's going to work for that family that everyone's going to follow through with. Yeah. So you have to find out what you're willing to commit to with regards to, you know, routine, structure, and scheduling and keeping things organized. You know, I always encourage, like you talked about, the corkboard by the fridge.
Yeah.
You know, in and out containers for, you know, the kids' stuff. They come home with stuff from school that you need to sign and return, permission slips, you know, those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can put them in the inbox when they come home from school. You can sign them, put them in the outbox, and they grab them on the way out.
Yeah.
That way you're not, like, running around looking for things
it's
in
like
the morning.
It's like an office setup, you know.
It really is.
Yeah, for sure. You know, another question I think sometimes people wrestle with, or it's related back to that motherhood guilt thing, but if we're leaving the kids with a nanny at home or whether they're at a daycare, often I think we're fearful that they were going to overly bond to that person and they're going to take over first place in our child's heart, that they're going to be more attached to them than they are to us. Is that a false kind of fear?
Well, you know, the truth is kids always know who their parents are.
Hmm.
And I think, you know, parents who have more than one children can testify to this, that, you know, when you have, you know, more than one kid, your love doesn't divide, it doubles.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important for kids to build bonds and to have strong bonds with their caregiver. You know, it's a catch-22 for some moms. They feel like, you know, they don't want their child to bond with their caregiver, but at the same time, they want them to be happy and have a good relationship and to be secure and those kind of things.
Yes.
And I can tell you, you know, nannies who last with the families for, you know, more than 5 or 6 years, it's because the families do understand that. They do understand that it's important for the child to bond with the caregiver, and they facilitate that. And they don't become jealous, and they understand that it's a different type of relationship. And it's an important relationship. You want your kids to have a third adult that they can turn to, that they can, you know, seek comfort from, that they can go to. But that's why it's important that you know who's taking care of your kid.
Mm. You know, this might be a tough question for you to tackle because maybe it's a regional thing, but what is the going price for a nanny these days? I mean, is
it
average?
It really depends on where you live and the type of experience nannies have. Nannies specialize, for example, in the past 15 years, I've only exclusively worked with families of multiples.
Oh.
So, you know, I found my little niche. But really, the average can go anywhere from $12 to $20 an hour, depending on where you live, the type of care you need, and the type of experience your caregiver has.
$20 an hour. Oh, my gosh. That would be brutal for some people. I mean, whoa. I can't even imagine that, because you'd have to have a really well-paying job to even afford that.
Well, you know, it depends on what you're looking for.
Yeah.
For example, I worked with a family. It was a dual-income family. Both parents worked. They traveled a lot. You know, I worked 60 hours a week, and, you know, my salary was almost double that. But, I mean, you know, it depends what you're looking for, what type of care you need.
Yeah.
You know, the average family doesn't need that type of care.
Right.
They may need care from, you know, 7 to, you know, 4 or 5, you know, 5 days a week. And, you know, you have to evaluate your own situation to determine what you need. It's not a one-size-fits-all solution.
Yeah, yeah. You also have a little section in your book about, it seems like it's almost a check if your kid, that your kid might be giving you warning signs that the daycare or the nanny thing is not working out well. Are there warning signs that you would look for in your kid, in your child, that they're not comfortable with, they don't really like the nanny? It's more than just your typical separation anxiety type thing?
Well, definitely. You have to know, you know, first of all, any kind of child care arrangement does have a transition period.
Mm.
And funny enough, usually things go real smooth the first 6 months, and then after the kids become comfortable, they're able to, you know, let go of the emotions they're held. And you sometimes see a little regression, you know, when kids start preschool, say, in September, come July, you can kind of sense, you know, the kid gets antsy because they become familiar with their surroundings. They're comfortable enough now to express their deep emotions that they kind of usually reserve for mom and dad.
Yeah.
So I think you have to, you know, gauge your own specific child. You know, talk to them. You have to have open-ended questions. You know, how was your day? What did you guys do today? You have to observe the interaction between the caregiver and the child.
Mm-hmm.
And you always have to take anything your child says seriously and investigate, you know, anything that they share with you.
Yeah, absolutely. What about this notion of latchkey children? What age, you're the nanny expert here, I mean, is there a certain age where you would say, okay, it's probably all right for most kids to come home to an empty house because they're old enough and the parents are going to be home in, you know, an hour or two? Is there an age where you'd say, yeah, that's probably,
you know,
okay?
Funny enough, some states actually have laws on the books telling you what is the minimum age requirement for different children. Some states, I believe, it's 12. Some states, it's 13.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to know, you know, first of all, what your state says regarding when children are able to be left alone.
Yeah.
But you want to, you know, again, it comes back to the individual situation. Is your kid mature enough to, every 13-year-old isn't the same, you know, level of maturity.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know your child. You have to know, you know, what their abilities are, what their capabilities are. You know, I encourage all parents that are going to have latchkey kids to enroll them in a safety course, a basic, you know, course that is taught at the local hospital, you know, at the fire station, at your community resource center, to give them some basic tips and strategies for dealing with, you know, being home alone.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's important.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to also have them sign an agreement and be clear and consistent about what your expectations are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're allowed to do X, Y, and Z. You're not allowed to do X, Y, and Z. Do you agree to have check-in times, to have a system in place where you're able to monitor your child, you know, from afar? I think that's important.
Yeah. You also talk about transition times, that these are kind of critical times in the whole parenting thing, transition times like dropping the child off or picking them up or bedtimes or coming home after school or whatever these various transition times are. And you have some specific tips for easing the stress of those transition moments. What are some of those tips?
You know, absolutely. Kids aren't like a light switch. You don't turn them off and turn them on.
Mm-hmm.
They need time to prepare and to change. For example, in the morning when you're getting ready to go, you know, we have 5 minutes left. We have 3 minutes left. It's time to go. keeping your goodbye short and sweet. Mm. You know, so much of what we do are nonverbal communication to our kids. Mm. They read and they gauge how to respond based on what we do. If you drop your child off in a daycare situation and you go back 5 or 6 times, you're sending the message that says, hey, I'm not really comfortable with where I left you. Something's wrong.
Ooh.
You know, you got to keep your goodbye short and sweet. Come up with a special handshake, a little catchphrase, you know, a tickle on the nose kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, your personal goodbye. But you want to convey that, hey, who I selected to leave you with, you're going to be safe with, and to be secure in your choice and to convey that to your kids.
Ooh, that's a really good idea. Yeah,
well, it's important.
It makes
our job much easier,
mm-hmm,
too.
Mm-hmm. What about the new mom who, if you're in this category, you know, with an infant, and yet you find yourself going back to work maybe after 6, 8, 12 weeks off, and now you have that question of, okay, do I continue breastfeeding because then I have to try to do the whole pumping thing? And so what kinds of tips have you learned or would you offer young moms like that?
You know, again, it's a personal decision. You need to evaluate, you know, what's best for your family situation. And I think you have to, you know, take into consideration, you know, the pros and cons. Some moms like to offer their children a bottle because that's important if they're in child care. What if breast milk runs out? Those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll offer often breastfeed in the morning and maybe even come home for lunch and in the evenings, but they'll have the caregiver provide a bottle, either formula or breast milk during the day. They'll pump when they're at work and they'll store up their milk supply. So I think it's important to really, you know, figure out what your goal is and to find creative ways to achieve that goal, whether it be approaching your employers about setting up a special, you know, room for pumping and those kind of things, or by, you know, deciding you're going to pump in your car, you know, park by a nice relaxing lake on your break and do it that way. But it's important to, you know, set your goals and standards and find a creative way to achieve them.
If you were to give a tip just for single moms now, and we just were to focus on them, what would your biggest bit of advice be for single moms?
Get your momtourage in order. You got to know who's in your support system.
Mm.
You have to reach out to community. You got to plug into your local church, your community centers. You got to know what resources are at the ready for you to utilize. You got to pair up with other parents and be willing to, you know, give and take from those relationships and be willing to be each other's backup. You have to have backup to the backup plan when you're a single working mom.
Oh, yeah. And trading off, you know, childcare responsibilities with another single mom could be a godsend, because sometimes we just have to have a break of some kind.
Absolutely. I think it's important, especially, you know, sometimes we can not want to ask for help. My mom, you know, was a single mom. She, this book is dedicated to my mom. You know, I grew up in, you know, she had 2 young children, and she made it work by, you know, she worked at a daycare, so we could go to daycare while she worked and those kind of things. But she, you know, needed to take time for herself, too, whether it be, you know, send us to our grandparents for a couple hours or to take turns swapping child care with her best friend, those kind of things, to give her the break that she needed to recharge and re-energize.
Yeah.
And again, that's why it's so important to wake up a few minutes early before everyone else is in the house, so you can get your shower in, so you can have a few minutes to gear up for the day, to spend time in the Word, to do things that you need to do to be ready and have a positive mindset for the morning.
And let's conclude with advice for married moms out there, because there's a special thing, a special bit of advice needed in that arena, because sometimes, and I can vouch for this because I did this wrong, I'm the poster child for how not to do it, we focus so much on the kids, and they are needy when they're especially really young, that we tend to forget about taking care of our husband and nurturing the marriage. So what would you say to married moms?
You know, you gotta have a date night. You have to have, you know, once a month date night. You know, switch with your best friend couple, you know, good friends in the church. Find another couple you can switch with. And, you know, even, you know, the other night, we have our date night once a month, and I had to force myself to go out. And, because, you know, with our 9-month-old, you know, we can still take her everywhere. We can take her to dinner. She'll sleep the whole time. It's like she's not even there.
Yeah.
But the point is we need to make time for each other. And, you know, I tell parents all the time, most kids go to bed way too late.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 7 to 8 o'clock in those infant and preschool years is like the latest your kid should be in bed. And that time after they go to sleep is valuable time, whether you'd be snuggling up, doing your devotionals, watching a movie, spending some time talking.
Mm-hmm.
That's couple time that you really need to factor into your day.
Wow, 7 or 8 o'clock for the bedtime?
Absolutely.
For a toddler or preschool?
Absolutely.
Ooh, that's interesting, because I know a lot of them that go to bed at 9 or 10 o'clock. Ooh.
Way too late. And, you know, it's funny, it affects their whole day. It affects kids need way more sleep than we give them sometimes. I think we absolutely have to reevaluate what time our kids go to bed and, you know, the bedtime routine. I think that can definitely make your day a lot more manageable when you have that squared away.
Mm. Now that you're a mom, I mean, here you've been a nanny, a professional nanny, an award-winning nanny for all these years. What has been the biggest surprise for you being a mom yourself?
you know, it's funny because, you know, I think we all have unique giftings and we all have unique callings. And, you know, I was with a family from the time the boys were 10 days old till they were 7, and they were twins, and I worked, you know, 50 hours a week.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love those kids like they're my own. And I think now, you know, with my own child, I see my love has grown, and I see that, you know, she's mine. Yes, I gave birth to her and all those things. But I've been surprised to think that, you know, how can you not love a little baby that's put in your care?
Mm.
And, you know, yeah. I'm fortunate to know that God took 15 years of experience for me to be a laid-back mom. So I'm much more laid-back than I would have ever thought. You know, your first kid, you know, the pacifier falls on the floor, you know, you sterilize it. The second kid, you dip it in water. The third, you lick it off. I mean, my kid didn't even get a pacifier, you know? So I kind of feel like, it's funny enough, but I feel like, you know, this isn't my first time around. So
yeah.
I'm much more laid back than I think a lot of people thought I would be.
Yeah. Hey, one last question, because I'm just kind of thinking of some of the young moms that I know right now and how they, you know, seem very frenzied and like things are kind of chaotic. And
okay, I have one word for them. Morning shower. I swear, like, I go into these houses or I talk to these moms that are so overwhelmed, and I say to them, like, you know, your kid's okay to cry in his crib for a few minutes while you take a shower.
Huh.
You know, you need that time to decompress, to get ready for the day, because you know what? If you don't feel good and you don't feel ready to start your day, you're going to have a miserable day. It really sets the tone.
Ooh.
So, you know, put your kid in, you know, the bouncy seat, in the bathroom, on the floor, you know, do something, but get your morning shower, like, and take time for yourself every morning. You have to.
Oh, that's very interesting. And see, because, you know, we don't want our
child
vital. Crying, but
it's
you're saying
vital.
10 minutes, they can cry in the crib, and it's not going to...
They can really yeah. cry in the crib. You know, safe environment, you know, no bumpers in the crib, nothing, no loose blankets, you know, not near the window blinds, those kind of things, you know. 5 minutes, 10 minutes, your kids can, you know, cry in the crib. It's really okay.
Because you need to take care of yourself first or you're no good to anybody.
You're no good to anyone. Not,
yeah.
Really, you know, a mama kiss for herself and takes care of herself can take care of others.
Yeah.
That's the truth.
Mm. Thank you so much for joining us, Michelle, and congratulations on your own new baby.
Thanks for having me.
All righty. Bye-bye. And we'd like to make several copies of Michelle's book available at no cost to those who email us here at lynn@debbychavez.com. And Lynn is spelled L-Y-N-N-E. Then request the book titled Working Moms 411 by Michelle Leroux. And we'll see if we can get you a free copy of that book. Back in just a moment with several Something You Should Know stories, including one, a new survey revealing how Americans' political views affect their faith. Also, some Americans voice concern over Islamic law's influence right here in the U.S. And a large new study indicates more Americans might want to take statin drugs for better health. All the details coming up in just a moment.
We're so glad you're a part of our internet radio family at laughyourway.com, your weekly source of wise, to-the-point marriage advice with Mark Gunger and Debbie Chavez. If you like listening to Mark Gunger on the radio, you'll love watching him live. Each week, Mark presents his Laugh Your Way to a Better Marriage seminar in cities across the country. This wildly entertaining and informative event is designed to bring hope and positive change to your marriage, improve your communication, help your spouse to better understand you and your needs.
Now, when a woman is stressed out, she has to talk about it. If she doesn't talk about it, her brain will literally explode.
Don't wait. Events are filling up fast. To view a schedule and register for an upcoming event, visit us today online at laughyourway.com. That's laughyourway.com. If you like listening to Mark Gunger on the radio, you'll love watching him live. Each week, Mark presents his Laugh Your Way to a Better Marriage seminar in cities across the country. This wildly entertaining and informative event is designed to bring hope and positive change to your marriage, improve your communication, help your spouse to better understand you and your needs.
Men's brains are very unique. Men's brains are made up of little boxes. And we have a box for everything. We've got a box for the car. We've got a box for the money. We've got a box for the job. We've got a box for you. We've got a box for the kids. We've got a box for your mother somewhere in the basement. We got.
Don't wait. Events are filling up fast. To view a schedule and register for an upcoming event, visit us today online at laughyourway.com. That's laughyourway.com.
the program with our Something You Should Know stories of the day. Well, first of all, Barna Research Group has just completed a large new survey kind of highlighting spiritual differences between political liberals and political conservatives. Very interesting stuff. Based upon an evaluation of more than a dozen religious beliefs of liberals and conservatives, consistent and significant differences are quite evident. Liberals are less than half as likely as conservatives to firmly believe that the Bible is totally accurate in all of the principles it teaches. Just 27% of liberals agree that the Bible is totally accurate. 63% of conservatives say it is. That's a humongous difference. Also, if you compare those who say they strongly believe that Satan is real, only 17% of liberals strongly believe that Satan is real, but 36% of conservatives strongly believe that. How about this statement? Do you firmly contend that you have a personal responsibility to share your religious beliefs with others? Just 23% of liberals say yes, but 48% of conservatives. There's a whole bunch of other interesting findings here. Let's walk through a couple of more of them. Liberals far less likely than conservatives to strongly believe this statement that your religious faith is very important in your life. 54% of liberals say yes, their religious faith is very important, but 82% of conservatives say their religious faith is very important. How about this statement? A person cannot earn their way into heaven by doing good deeds or just being a good person. 23% of liberals say that, 37% of conservatives. This is another huge difference on this next one. Is your faith an increasingly important moral guide in your life? Only 38% of liberals say that. 70% of conservatives say that faith is becoming an increasingly important moral guide in their life. Wow. How about church? They asked this question about the church they currently attend. Is it very important in helping you find direction and fulfillment in life? 37% of liberals said yes. 62% of conservatives said yes. Here's another one where there's quite a big difference. Is your primary purpose in life to love God with all your heart, mind, strength, and soul? Which is, of course, a Bible verse. So is your primary purpose to love God like that? 43% of liberals said yes, 76% of conservatives. And here's just kind of an interesting one. They asked, Jesus Christ, I guess they made this statement and asked them to respond. Jesus Christ did not commit sin while he was on earth. Only 33% of liberals thought that, but 55% of conservatives. Liberals are also much less likely than conservatives to believe that God is the all-knowing, all-powerful creator of the world who still rules the universe today. Only 55% of liberals thought that, but 82% of conservatives did. This is just a fascinating survey. I could go on and on because there's just so many interesting, differences between those who say they're politically liberal and those who say they're politically conservative. They asked about actual practices, daily, weekly practices of liberals and conservatives. They found that 57% of conservatives read the Bible other than at church during a usual week. 57%, but just 33% of liberals. In terms of church attendance in an average week, 62% of conservatives say they attend church. 35% of liberals have attended church in the past week. What about just praying other than at church? Just basic, do I ever pray to God in the past week? 91% of conservatives said yes, compared to 76% of liberals. Let's see what else. There were a couple other ones that were interesting. Oh, conservatives were twice as likely as liberals to be categorized as born-again believers. 63% of conservatives said that they would consider themselves to be born-again believers, but just 32% of liberals. So just interesting differences along the political line when it comes to faith. Well, speaking of faith, according to Fox News, as America's Muslim population grows, so too does the influence of Islamic law, or Sharia, in daily life in the United States. According to Abdullah Ananin, a professor at Emory University, Sharia law is the totality of the Muslim's obligation. According to this professor, Sharia is similar to Jewish Talmudic law or Catholic canon law that it guides an adherent's moral conduct. While many view this as a testament to the great American melting pot, others see Islamic law's growing influence in the U.S. as a threat. Sharia's critics point to cases such as the airport in Minneapolis, where some Sharia-adherent taxi drivers made headlines a couple years ago for refusing to pick up passengers they suspected of carrying liquor. The driver's aversion to alcohol stemmed from a verse in the Quran that describes intoxicants and gambling as an abomination of Satan's handiwork. Last year, a Tyson food plant in Shelbyville, Tennessee, replaced its traditional Labor Day holiday with paid time off for a Muslim festival. A labor union had requested the change on behalf of hundreds of Muslim employees, many of them were immigrants from Somalia, but public outcry over that decision to dismiss Labor Day quickly prompted the company and union to negotiate a new contract that makes accommodations for both holidays, the Muslim festival and then also the traditional Labor Day. And in 2007, the University of Michigan installed ritual foot baths to accommodate Islamic tradition at the University of Michigan. So all sorts of things kind of popping up. And troubling some Americans, saying that it's definitely affecting our culture. So I just thought I'd bring that to your attention. And lastly, in health news, a major new study indicates statin drugs taken by millions and millions of Americans to lower cholesterol also can cut the risk of developing dangerous blood clots that can lodge in the legs or lungs. The results provide a new reason for many people with normal cholesterol to consider taking these medicines sold as Crestor, Lipitor, Zocar in a generic form. In the study, Crestor cut nearly in half the risk of blood clots in people with low cholesterol but high scores in a test for inflammation, which plays a role in many diseases. The same big study last fall showed that Crestor dramatically lowered rates of heart attacks, death, and stroke in these people who are usually not given statins now. The test for high-sensitivity C-reactive protein, or CRP, is a measure of inflammation, which can mean clogged arteries or less serious problems such as an infection or injury. It costs about $80 to have the blood test done. The government doesn't recommend it be given routinely, but now federal officials are reconsidering that. So, interesting news about statin drugs. Well, time for our healthy recipe of the day. I made this the other day for a little dessert. It's a lemon streusel muffin, and it's very lemony, so you have to like lemon to like these muffins, but I love lemon, so I thought they were killer good. Each muffin, 241 calories, 3.6 grams of saturated fat, and 37 grams of carbs. Very, very tasty. It's posted right now. That recipe is posted on our healthy recipe tab of the DebbieChavez.com website. Check it out. Until we're back again tomorrow, may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace as you trust in him.